The Any Day, great way to store food, reheat, or cook in the microwave. We use it all the time. You might see it on the Dinner Time Live, where we do microwave things. Not as much as I would like, but we'll get there. Maybe we'll do an entire microwave episode. And the Major Domo team has their own sleek frosted glass, matte black, called the IO Collection. And it's the best looking one, gotta say. So get that. And you can get 10% off when you visit cookanyday.com and use the promo code Dave to get 10% off. Go check it out. It's a good gift for everybody, including yourself. Also, check out Dinner Time Live on Netflix, Tuesdays, 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We had the bright idea that it actually happened, and I think sometimes the best way to do it is just do it without thinking about it, that we would outsource the recipes that we're going to make to the audience. And I don't know why we decided on 12. And I, even though I preface that this isn't going to cover the globe or the world at large and all the recipes, this is why the world can't have nice things, because clearly people can't listen to my own instructions. And we get, well, what about it? What about this part of the world? What about that part of the world?
I like y'all have one fucking voice. Job. Your audience voice is the
you
best.
You had one fucking job, audience. What about Antarctica?
Oh, no, penguin eggs? Racists?
What about the Indian Ocean? And all the islands there? You laugh because it's true.
You did anyway. Give 12 options, though. 12 pretty solid options.
Yeah, 12 options. But, you know, shame on us that we didn't get all the options from the entire world. But we did get a Swedish country, a Sweden in there somehow. We got a Scandinavian country. So let me just go off the 12. And I don't know when the cutoff is going to be, but when is the cutoff?
Well, it's got to be today because I got to go shopping for all these ingredients tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, the standings, I won't say what the standings are. The 12 dishes are Swedish waffle, something that we learned from Magnus Nilsson, the great chef. Chilaquiles, arguably the greatest breakfast food of all time. I don't know. I think that's a big statement. Cambodian noodle soup. I will not pronounce it in Cambodian because I'll get screwed. Wonton mein, lox scrambled eggs, potato pancakes, congee or juke, eggs benedict, any variation, biscuits and gravy, pozole, spam fried rice, and bacon, egg, and cheese sandwich. Yeah, we'll see which ones those are. And I think we'll do like 4 or 5 of them. And that's what we're going to do on Dinner Time Live. Go check it out. Who are guests? Do we say who our guests are?
When does this come out, you know?
The Monday before.
Yeah, fuck it.
Well, yeah. Well, just like somebody's had a lot of TV shows. One of them has been very successful in TV. And one of them is a stand-up comedian. What a surprise. All episodes of Dinner Time Live available streaming. And also, all episodes of Chris and Dave Dine Out available streaming on Hulu as well. Subscribe to the Major Domo YouTube channel. Go to YouTube and just type in Major Domo in the search bar, and you'll see a link to our channel. Sign up, and we put content out there all the time. So we're slowly building that up. And yeah, come check us out. Let's get on to the show. Welcome to the Dave Chang Show, part of the Ringer Podcast Network, presented by Major Domo Media. Thank you, Hello Tango, as always. Joined with Chris Yang. You know, we are remote. Chris is at work, though. There was a 3 things, and we decided to scrap it to change it up into this 3 things. It is April 3rd. This is around the time that people that are going to college or applying to colleges are finding out if they're going to college. So this is my 3 things, guys. If you had to do it all over again, would you go to your alma mater? Or would you go somewhere else? And give me three scenarios, three different. One of the scenarios is not even going to college. So number one is I went to Trinity College in New England. This is my 25th anniversary. They've asked me to attend, and I'm skipping it because I think I have some other commitment. The reason why is I think in my 10-year anniversary, I went, and they didn't even have a tent for us. My class.
They just had like some ropes on the ground. Just here's your area.
No, nothing. We were the only class that didn't have a tent. And I was like, yeah, fitting. It's hard to say I would not want to go back. It's not the most wonderful city in the world, Hartford, Connecticut. So it's hard to say like coulda, shoulda, woulda, because I wouldn't be here today if I didn't go there. Some like great memories in my life are there. Some of my best friends. And most importantly, all the things that I learned that still allow me to think about things. I don't know I would have done a religion, philosophy, and all that other stuff had I gone to another school. So I'm going to just say, like, Yeah, I don't know. It's a tough question. Would you?
What are three things you would have done?
So I want to preface this.
What would you have done differently?
If you could still be here today, right? Without
sure.
With changing your alma mater, your college, right? So it doesn't really change the fact that you went to USC, the fact that you went to your Cal Bear, the fact that I'm a bantam, whatever the hell that is. And you got three other schools. So I will tell you my three schools. If I had to go to an Ivy League school, if I had let them accept me, if I let those schools let me in, all right?
Yes.
Probably wouldn't go to Cornell. You know, SUNY Cornell, it's out.
So rough. So rough.
It's the most prestigious of the state university schools in New York.
So rough. So no Cornell. Who would you have let you let you in?
I'd rather go to, by the way, it's not even the coolest of the schools in that area. I'd rather go to Syracuse than Cornell. Right?
Just fucking Cornell just catching strays here. Cornell was just sitting there and got chosen as not this Ivy League he would have gone to and is now just being sullied.
I don't know. I think the popular choice is like, oh, I'd go to Brown. I think I'd go to Harvard. I'd say like one choice is I'd go to Harvard just so I could like make people upset. That I could be one of those people like, you're in a group setting. We're all meeting for the first time. And it's like, hey, where are you from? Oh, where'd you go to school? Oh, I went to Georgia Tech, or I went to George Washington University. Oh, it's cool. I grew up in DC. Blah, blah, blah. Where'd you go to school, Dave? Oh, I went to school in Boston. I went to school in Cambridge.
Where in Boston? Oh, Cambridge. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dick.
It's just so I could have that asshole dick interaction. That's what I would do. Right?
Yeah.
It's the worst interaction should you ever meet it.
I hate that move. It's the worst.
I hate it so much. And it happens way more than it needs to.
It's mostly a Harvard
thing.
Every now and then you'll run into somebody who says, oh, where'd you go to school? I went to school in Yale in New Haven. It's like, oh, really? The one in New Haven? I thought maybe a different one.
Really, the worst one for the Ivy League is, oh, where'd you go to school? Oh, I went to Wharton. Oh, what other person, group of people named their business school as their school?
Such dicks, man.
Oh, I went to Wharton. No, I asked you where you went to school, not your program, you asshole. So just to be a douchebag, I would say Harvard. I went to school in Cambridge. Then I think I'd probably choose University of San Diego for the weather.
Mm-hmm. University of San Diego, not the UC San Diego.
UC San Diego.
Okay. Checking.
Yeah. What did I say before?
Is there a University of San Diego too, right? No.
There's a University of San Diego as well.
Well, let me tell you what. Any school in San Diego is where I would go.
SeaWorld Academy.
Don't matter. So that's my second choice. Any school in San Diego is good with me. Don't even matter if it's a Seventh-day Adventist, you know. I think weather is supremely important now that I had shitty weather in college, right? If you're going to do 4 years of, you know, lounging around, studying, doing nothing, part-time jobbing, might as well do it in arguably the greatest weather in the world is in San Diego. If you haven't experienced San Diego weather, I think it's a pretty safe play to say this might be the best weather in the world.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
It's true. It's pretty fucking good. Last one is, I probably would go to University of Georgia.
Why?
Or some big school.
Like a big football school. Like a big like SEC school. Yeah.
It'd be, you know, UT, Austin, University of Georgia. One of those. Yeah, that's it. Because I couldn't go to Auburn because that school sucks. Alabama, I couldn't deal with that. I feel like Georgia, there's enough diversity that I could like deal. You know what I mean?
Alabama, I couldn't deal with that.
Yeah.
I mean, I would also say I'd maybe even throw in Ole Miss, right? But like Oxford's pretty cool, but I don't know. University of Georgia seems like those would be my three picks. Okay. The three things I think about if I had to do it all over again. Right.
And you could have ended up in the same place.
Any school in San Diego and University of Georgia.
One. So let me get this right.
There you go.
One for the dickish bragging rights.
Just being an asshole.
One.
Two for the weather.
Purely for the weather. Doesn't even matter what school it is there. And the third one, just for like the football culture. Those are basically the three things you were missing going to Trinity. Basically, you filled in the things you were missing from going to Trinity.
This is true.
Weather, bragging rights, and a football team.
I mean, I didn't know. Chris Ying went to school with QA Ron.
Come on, man. I didn't. Did we overlap with QA Ron? I don't think so.
I think you did. You, QA Ron.
You know what sucks about Aaron Rodgers is like he and Marshawn were all we had to cheer for, and now we have nothing. Can't cheer for this bozo. Aaron
Rodgers. All right, what do you got, Chris?
I would have done a gap year. I think that especially for somebody like me who was you know, my parents drove me so hard toward academics in college. I had no idea of what the world was or what I wanted to do or what it meant to work or the privilege of going to school or anything like that. Like I had no sense of any of it. And I would encourage my own kids to do a gap year to not go to school for a year and figure something out. I would also have studied abroad for the same reason as Dave wants to go to Harvard. I want to be a dick who can cite my time studying abroad for the rest of my life as a reason why I'm more cultured than everybody else and why my Espanol is so good. And my third one, I probably would have gone to the East Coast. I'm such a West Coast kid. I think I missed my window to live on the East Coast, and I would have gone anywhere on the East Coast. I would, you know what? We could have done a Freaky Friday, Dave. You could have come to Cal and I would have gone to Trinity.
Wow.
You can learn some California cuisine.
I mean, how weird would that be? I don't think much would be different.
we would basically be exactly where we are right now.
Yeah, pretty sure. All right, you know what? What about you?
Well, I went to the school I wanted to go to and have no regrets. I think that's what the indoctrination at the University of Southern California does to you, is that you just look back fondly at all the times you blacked out and went to football games. But
so you don't have to pick another school. You didn't have to pick another school like Dave and I did that would have given you the right to be a dick because you went to one of the schools already.
Yeah, I was like, well, we already checked that box off, and it's not for academic reasons. It's just because, like, you know, we're Slytherin, and we had the football culture. I did pretty much everything in school that I wanted to do. I got to write for the school paper. It sounds really nerdy, but I always wanted to do that. So yeah, I just did everything. I had a very fulfilled college life. It also took me a while. So, yeah, I'm just grateful looking back at college.
You wouldn't do it at any other school.
My mom really wanted me to go to Claremont McKenna. Like she wanted me to go to like an,
dude, no, well, that's not part of the conversation. But, like, hey, no, you have to choose three other options, not USC.
I choose USC. I refuse. My allegiance to my school is so strong that I refuse to even like think about cheating on it with three other schools. I can't do insane. It.
That's the dickish.
No. We're not continuing this podcast until you actually choose three schools or three options. I'm going to brewery school. I'm going to become an.
Oh, you know what? Caltech.
Just do three things. I don't give a fuck.
Caltech.
Whoa. These are schools that you think you could get in.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, I believe in myself, baby. I believe in myself.
I mean, I'm not getting to Harvard.
Yeah. I mean, no, you could, but like now for sure. But like Caltech,
such as the arrogance of a USC student that they think they could get into Caltech. That's the whole thing.
Yeah, just USC. Have to try hard. Just have to work hard,
not,
baby.
You know, can I tell you one thing? Not one Caltech student has ever transferred into USC.
You know what? That's true. The only Caltech. I was trying to think about which one of my friends had transferred out, and I was like, yeah, never USC. It's always somewhere else.
Yeah, to MIT.
Don't say that in front of them. I think Caltech. I wanted to be a chef at one point in my life. And so I probably would have gone to culinary school. I legit looked up the brochures for CIA and all that stuff. And third one, religious school, divinity school, become a pastor. I also thought about that. So yeah, those are my three kind of off kilter weird ones. You're welcome. USC.
Thanks for nothing. So brutal.
This episode is brought to you by Vital Farms. No matter how you like your eggs scrambled, over easy, or sunny side up, the people at Vital Farms believe in one thing: keeping it bullshit free. That's why their pasture raised eggs come from hens who each have over 108 square feet of space to roam and forage all year round. So you can spend less time questioning your food and more time enjoying it. Look for Vital Farms in your grocery store and learn more at vitalfarms.com. Vital Farms, keeping it bullshit free. This episode is brought to you by Pure Leaf Iced Tea. Great iced tea takes you somewhere else, like new Pure Leaf Blackberry Iced Tea that we have here at the Spotify Studios and drink quite a bit, where unexpectedly blackberry flavor transports you to a berry delicious place. So refreshing, you may never want to leave. You will eventually have to, though. But take your time. Try new Pure Leaf Blackberry Iced Tea. Visit amazon.com/pureleaf and enter 20 Pure Leaf. That's 20 Pure Leaf for 20% off your purchase of new Pure Leaf Blackberry Iced Tea. All right, guys, we got an Ask Dave, you know?
Well, it's time for Ask Dave. I want to thank everybody for reaching out and listening and all the people sending in back tips for Dave. They have still not stopped, Dave. We're getting nonstop back tips. Remember, you can always send your questions to askdave@majordomomedia.com, or our Discord users can just tag at you know with questions, and I'll be sure to read them for a chance to be featured on the show. Today's question comes from Hajar B in Dubai. Hello, Dave and the gang. I'm really sorry to hear you're hurting, and I hope you feel better soon. The podcast is amazing. DTL is awesome. I want to say a huge thank you for all the effort. Nothing makes me happier than a Chang podcast on my morning walks. I have a question about cookbooks. As a home cook, I do have a lot of them, have quite a collection, but lately some of them are not worth investing in. They get so pricey. What are your favorite ones? Which ones would you recommend to get for everyday cooking? Maybe there are some books you really love. Much love from Azerbaijani living in sunny Dubai. Best regards, Hajar.
Cookbooks for everyday cooking. I think I'm not that familiar with home cookbooks, like domesticated cookbooks. I will say that anything that is like a Marcella Hazon everyday Italian type of thing would probably be a good one. I think Mark Bittman's cook, How To, is a good one. I don't know. I can only give you professional cookbooks.
Yeah, I mean,
you would know better than myself.
Yeah, sort of. I mean, I kind of agree with you. You know, like for me, it's sort of why you wrote Cooking at Home in the way you did, Dave, right? Because it's like the path for you toward cooking better at home isn't like to follow recipes, but is to get better at cooking, right? So there's like Cal Peternel from Chez Panisse had that book. What was that book called? There's a few of books that are like this that are not necessarily just like, here are a bunch of recipes, 12 recipes he had. They're more just like one expansive recipe that sort of explains things that and helps you understand what you're doing in the kitchen. To that point, I also think that books like Harold McGee's books that aren't cookbooks are sort of more important to understanding. Like that's the ticket, I think, in getting better at cooking at home, is just knowing what the fuck is going on when you're cooking, rather than here's a simple revelatory recipe that's going to change everything. So maybe you find one amazing recipe in a cookbook. Does that make the $40 cookbook worth it? Or is it more worth it to have, you know, all of this knowledge that comes with a cookbook like that? So I think the cookbooks that you're into, Dave, are sort of more about like capturing somebody's philosophy, you know, a chef that you admire, somebody you look up to. You know, we talk about Corey all the time, but, you know, like Hajar talks about cookbook prices going up and being pricey, but, you know, Dave, when you put out Momofuku, right? That was everything that was like all of everything, all of your work, your body of work up until that point was included in this book, you know? And to me, when a chef really does that, when like really pours their philosophy into a book, and I don't even care about the ratios of recipes. I don't care about how they're made, but if they're putting everything, all of their discoveries and all of their thought processes and the way they see food into a book and giving that to you, you know, like $40 is cheap to me to have that. So that's why I like to buy those kinds of cookbooks. And that's why, you know, those are worth it to me more than, you know, something that promises 105 incredible recipes that will tickle your wife or whatever.
Well, I think it's important to know, Chris, that cookbook industry today is very vastly different than it was 30 years ago, 20 years ago, pre-pandemic. From what we've been told, cookbooks don't sell. Cookbooks sell, but not like they used to.
I mean,
they're niche, or they're like specific brands. But before, everyone got a cookbook. Now that's just not happening. I think things have been consolidated amongst the publishers and such. The reason also is cookbooks used to be a window into a philosophy of cooking. You didn't have to be a professional chef. Now you have podcasts, you have YouTube, you have Masterclass. You have all these other things that allow you to become a better cook. TikTok, Instagram, and influencers. And I think ultimately that has diminished the need for a cookbook. And oftentimes what I mean by that is if you were relatively unknown and you made a cookbook that was awesome, that was your calling card. That was your introduction to an audience. And that's just not needed anymore. So if I were you and I was thinking about building a cookbook collection, I would not think about collecting introductory cookbooks. I would actually start to, it's like anything else. If you're going to collect baseball cards or stamps or whatever, right? Once you understand the language and the lingo, you're going to see like, oh, these are the things that every collector needs to have. If you so choose, you want to go down that road. I used to be that. I don't collect cookbooks anymore, but you know, I have a hard time believing that someone that's not in the profession would geek out enough to go deep down into the professional rabbit hole of, oh, I got the first edition, you know, Grand Livre by Ducasse and da 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 da. I just don't think that's going to happen.
I agree. But it makes me think, you know, just last week or just this week, we did this vegan episode of Dinner Time Live, and you cooked the peas and white chocolate, or a version, an ode to Jeremy Fox's peas and white chocolate from Ubuntu, this restaurant that, you know, no longer exists. Fox was there from 2007 to 2010. That's from that same time period, you know, Dave, that you're talking about, where these books were, you know, the market for this was really strong. These books were really coming out. They really meant something. And, you know, Fox had been working on that, on vegetables book for so long, and had all these photos from, like, the book came out years and years and years after Ubuntu closed. But going back and looking, flipping through to find the picture of, you know, his peas and white chocolate, you know, that to me was important. And I don't know if that still feels important to you, but it was an interesting experience in the last couple of days, flipping through that book and being like, oh shit, that's what it looked like. I remember that. I remember eating that dish. All of that. It was always used to be fun.
Yeah, I'm a little bit saddened the fact that I don't look at cookbooks or think about cookbooks the way that I used to. I used to save up with anticipation and go to Kitchen Arts and Letters, get every Farinaggia cookbook, LBE cookbook, and just look at everything, even if it was in a language I didn't even know. Yeah, those were special times.
But you always talk about,
I don't know how I could get back into that.
It's like the difficulty of like that. Like that, you talk about this all the time, though. When it comes to being invested in something, some kind of culture, whether it's music or art or film or food or sports memorabilia, the sort of the suffering and the difficulty of saving up money, going out and buying the thing, not even be able to understand it, looking at some, you know, Japanese version of something, seeking out the original Spanish language version of these books or whatever it is. That's always sort of intrinsically tied in like what cements you as somebody who is really into this thing you're into. And, you know, to your point, Dave, like you said, you talk about all the time. It's so much easier now. If I wanted to see what the dishes from LBU look like, I can just Google it. And so, like, I don't have to work for it. It doesn't make me love it more, you know, if I could just Google it and forget it in right. 2 seconds, you know?
So we didn't really answer the question, but I think we
did. This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com. This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
All right, everybody, it's time for My Opinion is Fact, a segment where Dave and Chris give their hot takes on a variety of topics.
Do you guys feel that it's appropriate for reservations to charge a lot of money if you don't show up on time or if you are a no-show? Right? Because a lot of these reservations now that are relatively exclusive, they charge you, what, $250? And I think things slip through the cracks where you might have had a mistake, or I don't know how, but because it only happens in America. Do you feel that's something that should be negotiated? Or is that just like ironclad? Because I can understand from both sides. Because sometimes when I get a reservation, right, for my wife's birthday, you know, it was looking at a restaurant and I was like, whoa, that's like, it's pretty ridiculous, you know? And not that I'm intending to probably spend that money for a celebratory occasion, but there's something about the inhospitable nature of it right off the bat.
You mean just sort of them laying out the cancellation fees, the no-show fees, all of that sort of
thing? We've done that. I'm not trying to, you know, be a hypocrite here. We've done that. I'm just saying this is the contradictory nature of it all. It's like I can see both sides. Because if you no-show at a restaurant that needs this, oftentimes that one table, we've talked about this many times, is going to be the determining factor if you've had a profitable night or not. One table, one guest, which sounds ridiculous, but oftentimes that is true.
Yeah, I mean, I guess my first reaction when I see these sort of cancellations, you know, not made within the final 24 hours, will be charged full, whatever. My first thought is like, oh, I have all the way up until 24 hours. I got plenty of time. So like I guess I don't butt up against it that much. I've never violated it and had to pay it. Have you had to pay the cancellation fee before?
No.
Yeah.
No, I've never had to. Because I try not to be late or no show.
Yeah, you're a responsible diner. So to me, that's all it is. Responsible diners don't have to pay the cancellation fee. Like what I guess I don't see the other side. Can you explain like who is on the other side that would be like, oh, that's not really fair. They have to pay that.
I think that most people don't like anything that fucks with the system and the ways that people normally buy food. Again, Wendy's got destroyed because they introduced variable pricing. There was a giant backlash. People are unwilling to change. And I don't think there's a better way to do it other than, you know, we're going to charge you. My goal is, one of the things I wish we could bring back as we move out of this to a different MOIF, I want house accounts to come back to restaurants. That to me would be the coolest thing in the world. Right. You know, my dad used to take us to this, again, the Italian restaurant with a guy he used to wait tables with. And it was always a house account. You know, you settle up at the end of the month or every couple months.
Hmm.
I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of, like, yeah.
But
like,
clearly not every restaurant can do that.
Yeah.
I want to go to a restaurant. I want to go to a restaurant where I can get a house account. That's also not a private club. All, by the way, all of these private clubs we've been talking about for some time. I feel like we were probably the first people to call that trend. And it doesn't have to be a private club.
Yeah.
There's something nice to be able to go to a restaurant and not worry about the bill. And just be like, I'll take care of it later. Right? That's just who we are. I'll take care of it later.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, yes. You know, at crypto.com arena, they have one of those Amazon like convenience stores where you just walk in and walk out and it's amazing. And
greatest thing.
I don't know. It's just like, it's suspend any responsibility and I deal with it later when I have to deal with it later.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, everybody, I mean, it's the beauty of eating at a restaurant in the hotel you're staying in. Just like, oh, charge, you know, I'm staying in this room, like, I'll deal with it later. There is something nice about, you know, removing that transaction from the end, right? It always feels like a little funny at the end of this, like, really beautiful meal, or even a normal meal where you've been treated, you know, so hospitably and everything, that there's this necessary moment where it's like, let me present this black booklet that we all like. The black book exists to hide the thing inside, right? It's like some sort of like little privacy shield, just to be like, nobody wants to speak of this moment. There's like money is inside of this thing. It's like a little curtain inside. Like it's the gross part, you know?
I mean, that reminds me of a resort that I won't say, but this happens in a lot of places. And I'm sure this happens in restaurants as well, but like, I don't want to give away the activity that I did. Let's just say it was an outdoor excursion, like a hike. And then you're like, oh, they offered me the hike. Great. And then you settle a little bill. You're like, they charged me for the fucking hike and the lemonade that came with the hike. What the fuck?
Yeah. But like, I mean, you're mad about it in that moment because you thought it was just like, we're going for a walk and I have some lemonade for you. You didn't know it was like a menu option. But I do think it's funny though, like you're totally right about this kind of transaction nature that sort of like spoils the fun of it. I've never really given that much thought to like the check presenter being, it's so funny that like they'll present the check. If they don't have a check presenter, the receipt comes face down and then like the server scurries away before you look at it. You know what I mean? It feels like some relic of like an ancient time. It does feel like a weird like modesty screen or whatever, having to like, nobody wants to see the amount of money, even the server who knows it and you who have some idea. It's a funny little thing we have going.
I mean, this is something that Ying and I tied back to the steak episode in Ugly Delicious, the fact that dining, again, like I think about this quite a bit. If the three of us were hunter-gatherers before, you know, organized culture and society, you know, we're literally living off the land. People would depend on us for their sustenance from hunting.
Sorry, guys, nothing today.
All right. You go months, month at a time. It's like when you watch those wilderness videos where like, oh, that pride of lions, like they've been hungry for a month. They failed like 90 times and they finally celebrate by catching that one, you know, wildebeest or whatever. So, you know, we would suck, but every once in a while we'd get lucky and we'd get some kind of giant buffalo and we'd celebrate and we'd think about all the delicious ways we were going to cook it. And you take in the life of an animal and you bring it back and, you know, 2 hours earlier, we thought we were schlubs. And now we think we're the greatest hunters in the world, right? We're providing, yeah. We're eating, we got braised, we got steaks, we got tartar, we're feeling awesome. The reason it feels so good is the intense amount of suffering that we endured, right? Mm-hmm. To me, mm-hmm. the bill, the high bill in a restaurant, whether it's a Chipotle or, you know, a three Michelin star restaurant, it's the only reminder of suffering that we have left to our food.
But here's the thing. It comes afterward.
Yeah, it comes after.
After. So are you, I mean, basic question then. Are you, do you prefer restaurants, like speaking of like, you know, Resi Talk, these types of things, do you prefer the restaurant where you prepay the full amount and then go in and eat and don't have to get a bill at the end?
I think that to some degree is the future, right? But it's not for every restaurant. But, you know, I don't think we'll ever answer that completely. But I do think the idea of suffering is inherent in the pleasure of the food that we eat. And like, it's the only thing that's left. I would be like, ugh, that hurts. It's not even remotely close to the pain and suffering you might feel like of going days without hunger at all. You know, like steakhouses used to be in slaughtering facilities, like literally like beef steaks. There used to be carcasses on the wall, right? Like you're surrounded by death.
Mm-hmm.
Not anymore. So if I was a 21-year-old graduate, you know, undergrad that was smoking way too much marijuana and imbibing, you know, all kinds of things, this would be my senior thesis. And I would get a C+ on the senior thesis because in the oral defense, they'd be like, in no way have we found any correlation between what you're talking about and early mankind.
And then in this section, you start talking about Beethoven's Ode to Joy. I don't understand where this is going here.
Yeah.
I love that, though. I love the sting of the bill is the last remaining suffering that a modern human can endure when getting their food. That's funny.
It's true. My next opinion. I've been talking about this ad nauseum. I don't know if chef collabs are worth it anymore.
Describe. Do you think they're still worth it? About. Like what? Do you, like a chef is coming to town to cook so and so. It could be so and
so. So what? Yes. So let's talk about this. This is just more of a conversation start. At what point is it worth it, and what point is it not worth it? Right. So is it worth it when you get 2 to 3 chefs and you're doing a bespoke dinner for like one turn of like 40 to 60 people? Is it worth it? Right. If you got Pascal Bobeau cooking with, you know, Kwame Onuachi and Alice Waters, whatever. They'll be like, oh, that's fucking cool. You know? And they're really there. They're cooking for us. I'd say like, yeah.
You think that like,
but you're, again, like you... I don't love it. I don't love it.
In those formats, I mean, let's talk about this. In those formats, if there's, you know, a four hands dinner or whatever it is, generally speaking, in your experience, how often is it a true collaboration where, you know, like the way that I've seen you do it, where you and Renee are, it's not even for a dinner. You're just in the kitchen cooking together, coming up with things, literally cooking a dish together versus, okay, chef, like you do courses 1 and 2, I'll do courses 3 and 4, you know, and that's it. Like, here's your stuff.
No, I'm basically saying like this is probably the only way it's worth it, right? And I would say when it's really worth it is, I think Renee right now is doing a good test case for a lot of people. Because if you're going to do a pop-up, it's when you bring the entire team and you're there for a considerable period of time. Like, those are probably the instances where it's worth it, where you have, it's an intimate experience with a couple, 2 to 3 or 4 chefs, or it's a just, we're moving the whole team kit and caboodle and we're just setting up shop and we're doing, I think that's worth it. That'd be like watching some band that's back together that you wanted to see. I sent you guys this. Lauren Collins, staff writer for The New Yorker. She lives in France. She wrote an article. I have not read it. I only looked at the photos, but it said the hottest restaurant in all of France is a buffet at a state, like a city municipal, like recreation center. And can we post the photos, you know,
Yeah, I'm gonna
for the audience.
I'll get them over.
This stopped me dead in my tracks at 1 a.m. when I couldn't go to bed. It looks like the most fabulous restaurant of all time. It
looks insane. The photos are absolutely insane.
And this is my dream restaurant. This is it.
It looks like what Wonka's Willy's Chocolate Adventure promised. Like the first photo is a 6-tiered tower of probably no fewer than 150 boiled lobsters stacked on ice, leading to like an uplit chandelier. There's like,
look at all the hams they have this for slicing. Look at every, it just looks like the most soigné buffet. And if you ask me, well, how I feel about this restaurant right now, and the reason why I'm not opening up the page and reading about it is because it's all I will think about. This is unequivocally the restaurant I have to eat at the most right now in the world.
Do we have any idea
what's how much the name of it?
The restaurant is called Le Grand Buffet Nerbonne. One price for everything. €57.90.
No way.
Prices as of January.
This literally looks like the most amazing fucking restaurant I've ever seen in my life. Oh my God.
It's very funny because Le Grand Buffet is the name of a film in which like a bunch of people eat themselves to death too. But this is outrageous. But this is unmitigated for you, Dave, your dream restaurant. This is like pure excitement to you. Like you love this.
I mean, you really only need one or two technically talented cooks to pull this off.
Just piles and piles of like,
it's like you only need one or two people that know that they're actually playing chess, and everyone else that's working there, they think they're playing checkers.
But without reading the article, having not read the article yet, do you think, and would you say the price is, you know, 53 euros or something like that? Low
57 euros and 90.
57 yeah. euros. Is this restaurant profitable, Chang?
Probably. I mean, that's France, so who the fuck knows, right? But there's a water slide right outside this, you know, very Baroque table set up. It's literally like at the local YMCA, right? And I live for this shit, man. Like these types of things that can only exist in like a Spike Jonze movie. This is the stuff the world needs in food. It doesn't make sense. So it should. This is the stuff we need. I'm telling you, this has got me more excited than anything. It's like if Ferran said, I'm bringing back LBE and I'm going to open up like a pop-up, and I'd be like, yeah, get me on a plane right away. I just have to see this, let alone like, I'm sure the food will never live up to the hype, but I have to see this mashup of something that should not exist. In a world where everything is the same, we should cherish these moments where the things that shouldn't exist actually do.
It feels like the kind of place that would be extremely offensive to people, to a certain group of people.
Yeah, the same people that don't understand that the number 12 doesn't include all the different fucking breakfast foods from around the world.
I mean, people would be offended by this idea of high French cuisine. Haute cuisine should never be served in such a low, crass.
What about setting. All the other cuisines? Why does it have to be just French? Huh? On that note, we'll call it a day. Thank you guys. Give us 5 stars. It's always weird doing these things remote, but the next pod, we will have the great Kelly and Chris Bianco joining us. Also, stay tuned. Dinner time live, where I'm going to make a fool of myself making breakfast.